Hi, Dave Emery here. This is, for the record, program number 1176, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates. This is being recorded on March 17th of the year 2021. Well, happy St. Patrick's Day for those people who observe such a thing. I'm not going to make a horse's rear end out of myself by trying an Irish accent. It is what it is. Before we get into the main body of the program, several notes. First of all, please do avail yourselves of the flash drive containing all of my life's work up through, for the record, 1156, plus a mini library of old anti-fascist books that I think will expand the listener's knowledge or sphere of awareness in a fundamental way. I get no money whatsoever from that flash drive. There is a link at the top of each post and at the top of the SpitfireList.com website to obtain that flash drive. And again, I get no money whatsoever from that. Be aware also that sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. They also archive them on MP3. If you would like podcasting of For the Record, there again is a link at the top of each post on the SpitfireList.com website. So you can click on that and the WFMU will podcast For the Record. So a tip of the hat to WFMU. Also, although we will not be discussing the COVID-19 pandemic in this program, I will be updating COVID-19 discussion, although we are not going to update it in this program. Please be aware that there was a factual error that I repeated in several programs with regard to the messenger RNA vaccines, or mRNA vaccines. Those are the Moderna and Pfizer-BioNTech vaccines. I incorrectly stated that they alter the DNA of a recipient's cells. My misconception was that the messenger RNA affected or communicated with or altered the DNA, which then manifested in the altered cellular machinery. That is not correct. The messenger RNA directly hijacks, and not my term, but it hijacks the cellular machinery to build proteins and antibodies on their own. A number of people have warned about the possibility of deleterious side effects of that, and it has proven in the past difficult, shall we say, to inject messenger RNA into human cells. We've talked about that in past programs, but please be aware that was an error on my part. This is not to say that there may not be bad long-term consequences from the mRNA vaccines. There is no way of saying yay or nay with regard to that because there has never been a messenger RNA vaccine approved before. So there is no database for making any kind of conclusion, positive or negative, in terms of long-term effects of messenger RNA. One of the sources of concern is that the press releases, that a lot of the positive data on the results of some of the COVID-19 vaccines, as we spoke about and from an article in the New York Times, which is really a pretty conservative source, although liberal politically. The New York Times is pretty staid and has very strong connections to the CIA and the military. The New York Times noted that a lot of the positive information that has gained popular circulation has actually come from press releases by the big pharma companies that have manufactured the vaccines rather than from peer-reviewed scientific studies. That is one source of concern. I also wonder, given the profound involvement of the military in the Warp Speed project under Donald Trump, and given the profound involvement of DARPA and the military in gain-of-function manipulations of bat-borne coronaviruses, I think the very significant role of the military in the vaccination program is a genuine source for concern, as well as my fear that gene drive technology, certainly being researched by the same DARPA / Pentagon / military elements that appear to have been involved in actually developing the SARS-CoV-2, they certainly have been involved with researching gene drive technology. How far that research has actually gone remains to be determined. My fear is that Nazi and fascist elements might very well introduce something like that into the vaccine. Again, I don't want to be mistaken as stating positively that that is the case. That is a fear. It may not, there is no documentation in that regard, but the Pentagon and Bill Gates have been very active in researching and developing gene drive technology, dubbed to be an exterminationist technology by experts in the field. So again, do note that very significant error on my part. The mRNA vaccines do not change the DNA in a recipient's cells. Rather, they manipulate, they directly hijack the cellular machinery to produce the desired effect. A number of scientific experts and the doctors have warned that that too might have some deleterious effects, but they don't change the DNA. Okay, so please be aware of that. Now, this program is titled Miscellaneous Articles and Updates, and we will be in this program and in future broadcasts updating what has been termed the Capitol riot, unquote. However, rather than dealing directly with that event, I want to go into greater length the reaction of none other than George W. Bush, who, after the Capitol riot, said that he was going to be attending the inauguration and, quote, "witnessing the peaceful transfer of power is a hallmark of our democracy that never gets old," he added, unquote. And I wonder what JFK would say about that, or his brother Robert, or a lot of other people. Veteran listeners certainly know that I am no fan of the Bush family, and George W. Bush in particular. One of the many aspects of W's reaction is the profound hypocrisy, because although there was no loss of life in what has been termed the Brooks Brothers riot in Florida that stopped the counting of the ballots in Dade County, in fact, it was basically a similar event. Rather than overwhelming the Capitol to prevent the certification of the Electoral College results, basically a bunch of Republican activists forced the cancellation of the or forced a halt to the counting of the ballots in Dade County. And one of the people involved in organizing that was none other than Roger Stone, the political fixer and a longtime confidant of Donald Trump. And but Roger Stone is also someone who has been implicated in the events of January 6th of 2021. People who were too young to remember, or people who basically never took notice, the certification, the installation of George W. Bush in the White House in 2000 was really special. There were a number of ballots with hanging chads and so forth. And as the ballots were being recounted, the Supreme Court ordered Dade County, that's the Supreme Court of the U.S., they ordered Dade County officials to stop counting the ballots. Then, because the Dade County officials had not completed the tallying of the ballots by a given date, this after the Supreme Court ordered them to stop counting the ballots, the Supreme Court ordered that they had not performed the necessary recount in time and gave George W. Bush the presidency. It was remarkable. And I would note that three of the Republican activists who were involved in the recount and the theft of the 2000 election were John Roberts, now Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, Brett Kavanaugh, who was appointed by Donald Trump, and Amy Coney Barrett, who was also appointed by Donald Trump. Those three are now sitting on the Supreme Court. For George W. Bush to talk about witnessing the peaceful transfer of power is a hallmark of our democracy that never gets old, that has puke power for me personally, equal to Nancy Pelosi referring to the Capitol as the temple of democracy. Again, I think the people's temple would be more appropriate. When I hear Nancy Pelosi talking like that, it makes me want to puke. When I hear George W. Bush talking about witnessing the peaceful transfer of power and so forth, that makes me want to puke as well. About equal puke power for both commentaries. One of the things that I noted in For the Record program number 186, called What Does the W in George W. Bush Stand For? That was the last program I did in calendar year 1999. I recorded that show in the last few days of calendar year 1999 because it was already quite clear that George W. Bush was going to be the Republican candidate for president. The W stands for Walker. George Herbert Walker, his grandfather, actually his great-grandfather, was one of the earliest backers of Adolf Hitler, a partner with the Thiessens. That program was about the background of George W. Bush and his family. And I noted in the beginning of side two of that program that Arbusto Energy, which was George W. Bush's first energy venture, was financed by the family of Osama bin Laden. The book Fortunate Son by the late J.H. Hatfield identified Salem bin Laden as bin Laden's father. That is incorrect. Bin Laden's father was Mohammed bin Laden. Salem bin Laden was one of his many brothers, but he was a key financier of Arbusto Energy and was operating in that regard courtesy of James R. Bath, one of the Central Intelligence Agency operatives who was requisitioned by Shrubs father, the late George H.W. Bush, for whom CIA headquarters is named. The Capitol riot, as it has come to be known, and other either intended or actual acts of right-wing violence in the last several years, have brought up discussion of the Turner Diaries. The Turner Diaries is one of the books put out by National Vanguard Books. That is the publishing wing of the National Alliance, arguably the most important domestic Nazi group, at least as of a few years ago. Its lead head was William Luther Pierce, himself a PhD, and noting a commentary that William Luther Pierce made in 1998. The excerpts that I will be talking about or are presenting to you are all sourced in For the Record program number 456, Compendium on Nazi and Fascist Connections to 9/11. William Luther Pierce in 1998, 3 years before the attacks, said the following. In one chilling commentary, Pierce, after noting that bin Laden and the rest of the lost generation of angry Muslim youth had had it with their parents' compromises and were hell-bent on revenge against infidel America, issued this stark prophetic warning. Issued this stark prophetic warning in a 1998 radio address titled Stay Out of Tall Buildings. Quote, New Yorkers who work in tall office buildings, anything close to the size of the World Trade Center, might consider wearing hard hats, Pierce warned. The running theme in Pierce's commentaries is, to paraphrase his hero Hitler, that Osama bin Laden's warning to America is, I am coming, and so is bioterrorism. That was a very prescient observation in 1998. I would note that the climactic event in the Turner Diaries, which again, although a novel, I believe it is a blueprint, a manifesto for what the Nazi right intends. The climactic event in the Permanent Diaries is a low-level suicide aerial attack on the Pentagon. It takes place on the German Day of Destiny, which is November 9th. That was the date on which the Beer Hall Putsch took place in 1923. It also is the date in 1938 on which the Kristallnacht took place. The Berlin Wall, as it happens, came down on November 9th. A German or any other European would write the date November 9th, 9/11. Another thing that takes place in the Turner Diaries is that the terrorist group, The Order, brings down a 100-story skyscraper in Manhattan. Now, of course, that is just a novel, and I'm just a wacky conspiracy theorist from California. California! Everyone knows that a terrorist group would not be able to collapse a 100-story building in Manhattan or launch a suicide aerial attack on the Pentagon. That is just silly. And that's the kind of thing we wackadoodle conspiracy theorists talk about all the time. Obviously, I'm being sarcastic. That did, in fact, happen. There is a great deal more to the September 11th attacks than even some more penetrating accounts have presented. It is a very complex event, and it it's a little bit like the parable of the three blind men and an elephant. One has a hold of the elephant's tail, another has a hold of the elephant's trunk, and another has a hold of the elephant's leg, and they give very different accounts of what it is that the creature actually looks like. The September 11th attacks are also a complex event. I think if I were going to make a comparison, I've stated in the past that it is rather like what would have happened if Adolf Hitler had been president of the U.S. when Pearl Harbor was attacked. It is similar to the German invasion of France in World War II, which was welcomed by the French power elite, who were fiercely anti-communist and hated the social front of Léon Blum, and they were pro-fascist, and they had, many of them, strong business links with their German compatriots. The French resistance of the Nazi invasion in 1940 was deliberately sabotaged from within because it was seen that the defeat of the French forces would be the best way of bringing fascism to France. I've spoken about that in a number of programs. I've excerpted the book Triumph of Treason by Pierre Coe, last name is C-O-T, in a number of different programs. You can use the search function on the SpitfireList.com website. One of the aspects of the September 11th attacks simply went by the boards, and that was the investigation of the bank Al-Paqwa. Al-Qaeda had an unlimited line of credit in the bank Al-Paqwa that was managed by a guy named Ali bin Musaleem, who was found dead in his Geneva, Switzerland apartment roughly a week, or a month rather, after information about, critical information about the bank Al-Paqwa was made public. Bin Musaleem had actually been under indictment in the U.S. in 1983 for conspiring to corner the silver market, that placing him in conjunction with Nelson Bunker Hunt of the famous Hunt family of Texas. The Bank Al-Paqwa was headed up by a former German intelligence agent named Yusef Nava, but the driving force behind the bank Al-Paqwa was a guy named François Genoux, about whom we have spoken many times. One of the most important figures in the Nazi diaspora at the end of World War II, François Genoux was the heir to the collected literary works and political last will and testament of Adolf Hitler, Martin Bormann, and Joseph Goebbels. And he was the driving force behind the bank Al-Paqwa, which had an unlimited line of credit in an account for Osama bin Laden. Ernest Bacchus, in an interview in October of 2001 with German radio, noted the following. Ernest Bacchus, last name B-A-C-K-E-S, is arguably Europe's most important and best financial, best expert on money laundering. And in that interview, he said, according to financial expert Ernest Bacchus's information, the money trail, meaning the 9/11 money trail, leads to Switzerland, to the accounts of an organization that was founded by the late lawyer François Genoux and evidently still survives. Says Bacchus, one of the grounds for accusation is that this Swiss attorney had the closest connections with the bin Laden family, that he was an advisor to the bin Laden family. He was one of the bin Laden family's investment bankers. It's known for certain that he supported terrorism and was the estate executor for Hitler and part of the terror milieu. François Genoux, by the way, bankrolled the legal defense of Adolf Eichmann, later did the same thing for Klaus Barbie, the butcher of Lyon. And noting that the bin Laden family had helped to finance George W. Bush's first energy company, Arbustil Energy, it is more than a little interesting to find François Genoux as a major financial advisor, described as one of the investment bankers for the bin Laden family. The deep politics of the 9/11 attacks are one of the many things that I find very significant. And again, all of the links, all of the sources for the information I'm presenting are in For the Record 456, Compendium on Nazi and Fascist Connections to 9/11. And speaking of Josef Naba, another valued World War II Nazi collaborator was Josef Naba, current board chairman of Alpaca or Naba Management, the Lugano, Switzerland, Liechtenstein, and Bahamas-based financial services outfit, accused by the U.S. Treasury Department of money laundering for and financing of Osama bin Laden's Al-Qaeda. As a young man, Naba had joined the armed branch of the secret apparatus of the Muslim Brotherhood and then was recruited by German military intelligence. When Grand Mufti al-Husseini, that's the Hajimin al-Husseini, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, who held the rank of Major General in the Waffen-SS, recruited three Waffen-SS divisions in the Balkans alone, eventually became the first leader of the Palestinian National Movement. When the Grand Mufti al-Husseini had to flee Germany in 1945 as the Nazi defeat loomed, Naba reportedly was instrumental in arranging the escape via Switzerland back to Egypt and eventually Palestine, where al-Husseini resurfaced in 1946. Again, according to the article from the Asia Times, Yosef Naba actually helped the Grand Mufti flee Germany and make it back to the Middle East. A San Francisco Chronicle article noted also about François Genoux. Authorities believe Genoux founded bank, Authorities believe Genoux founded Alpaca Bank and allocated its resources to support international terrorists such as Carlos the Jackal and Osama bin Laden. That speaks for itself. Still more about François Genoux and his links to the 9/11 milieu. Talking about SICO, the Swiss-based holding company that manages the bin Laden family interests. This coming from the book On the Trail of Osama bin Laden. This company, established by the naming SICO, the Saudi investment company, the Swiss-based holding company that manages the bin Laden family interests, this company, established by the bin Ladens in 1980, is the flagship for the group's activities in Europe. It is headed by Osama bin Laden, and the board of directors is made up almost exclusively of members of the family clan, except for a Swiss citizen, Baudin Dunant, D-U-N-A-N-D. This well-known lawyer from French-speaking Switzerland, who is on the boards of several dozen companies, came to public notice in 1983 when he agreed to represent Swiss banker François Genoux, a controversial figure who had been a disciple of Hitler. There were more than, he was more than just an attorney, he was also a friend and protege of François Genoux. And the point here being, and there is much more to the September 11th attacks, on March 20th of 2002, there was a combined FBI and the Treasury Department raid on some front organizations in the Virginia Beltway area around Washington, D.C. On April 4th of that same year, Talat Osman, a member of the board of directors of Harkin Energy, a man who had given a Muslim benediction at the Republican convention, interceded on behalf of the individuals and institutions who were targeted in that raid, including many associated with the Bank al-Taqwa. And eventually, Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill was fired near the end of that year, and the investigation was deep-sixed by Robert Mueller, who was head of the FBI at the time. Just noting W's crocodile tears, frankly, about the January 6th events in Washington, D.C., makes me ill, considering it was the September 11th attacks that basically gave him the free pass that he had for much of his administration's. And given the Bin Laden family's links to his companies, and given their many links to people like Francois Janou, well, it is disgusting. Another thing I would note is that the fellow who was just confirmed as Attorney General of the U.S. is Merrick Garland. Now, he had been nominated by Barack Obama to become a Supreme Court Justice. The Republicans stonewalled that nomination. Now he is Attorney General, and one of his most glowing or noteworthy elements of his career is the fact that he was the federal prosecutor in the Oklahoma City bombing. That prosecution was badly attenuated. Among the things it failed to do was to look for John Doe number two. Witnesses in Oklahoma City saw Timothy McVeigh in the company of an individual whom they termed John Doe number two. Composite sketches of John Doe number two look very much like a German national named Andreas Strassmeier, S-T-R-A-S-S-M-E-I-E-R, a former German military intelligence agent and the son of Günther Strassmeier, who was Helmut Kohl's chief of staff. Carol Howe, who was an ATF infiltrator into the Elohim City white supremacist milieu, testified and passed a three-needle polygraph examination that, in fact, Timothy McVeigh was Andreas Strassmeier's protege, and that Andreas Strassmeier was the real mastermind of the Oklahoma City bombing. That, however, was left out of the prosecution by Merrick Garland. Merrick Garland also did not pursue leads leading to the Philippines, where a Philippine intelligence officer named Edwin Angeles noted that there was a meeting in the Philippines where an American nicknamed the Farmer, unquote, who in fact was Terry Nichols, an associate of Timothy McVeigh in the Oklahoma City bombing, was networking with the likes of Ronzi Youssef, who was the mastermind in the first World Trade Center attack in 1993. Another article that we have in For the Record 456 is called The Terrorist Motel, or The Terror Motel. And that discusses a motel outside of Oklahoma City, which at various times Timothy McVeigh was seen in the company of various Middle Eastern men, including the 20th hijacker, Zaharias Moussaoui, who later rolled over and gave evidence against some of the participants and the financiers of al-Qaeda. Interestingly enough, Zaharias Moussaoui's attorney was a guy named Jacques Vergès, or one of his lawyers was Jacques Vergès, who was a protege of the aforementioned Francois Janou. Another interesting evidentiary tributary between the Oklahoma City bombing and the September 11th attacks once again concerns Andreas Strassmeier, who was noted by FBI agents to be looking for a surplus Lufthansa Boeing 747. Why he wanted one of those is a matter of speculation. Certainly he was not going to be using a Boeing 747 to land on a rural airstrip to bring in, well, cocaine, weapons, you name it. A Boeing 747 has a very limited sphere of operations. It can only land at a large airport. Was he, in fact, looking to get a Boeing, a surplus, Lufthansa Boeing 747 for a World Trade Center type attack? We will never know. And for the record, 520, we know that Andreas Strassmeier's exit from the U.S. was facilitated by a couple of former Special Forces operatives. Certainly, I think Merrick Garland, whatever his positive traits, in the past he has proved to have the same sort of national security blinders on as so many have in the past. Before leaving the subject of the Capitol riots, the events of January 6th of 2021, I want to note that among the crocodiles shedding tears along with George W. Bush was none other than former California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, who compared the events of January 6th of 2021 to Kristallnacht, the anti-Semitic pogrom in 1938, which, by the way, took place on November 9th. Schwarzenegger is incorrect. It was not, it would be best compared to the beer hall putsch, the unsuccessful coup led by Hitler in 1923. 10 years later, Hitler acceded to power. In a number of programs, we have noted that his public persona of being anti-Nazi notwithstanding, a number of people who knew Schwarzenegger on the way up have stated, in fact, he appeared to have something of an affinity for the Nazi mystique. More importantly than that, it's the fact that one of the driving forces behind the political rise of Arnold Schwarzenegger was a fellow named William Armistead Robinson, who was one of the key figures for the DHL German parcel delivery firm, which is now competing with UPS. William Armistead Robinson is a very secretive individual, and his CV would suggest the very distinct possibility that William Armistead Robinson is actually an operative of the remarkable and deadly Borman Flight Capital Organization, the organization that I believe will prove to be the dominant element in human affairs on this planet. And again, it is William Armistead Robinson who was one of the driving financial engines behind the rise of Arnold, the political rise of Arnold Schwarzenegger. Now moving to other articles and updates. In For the Record 1097, among other programs, we noted the decampment of various U.S. citizens, including a fellow named Craig Lang, who left the U.S. Army under something of a cloud. And he and another American named Zwiefelhofer were looking at the various right-wing militias in Ukraine as possible landing places for their military expertise. In fact, Craig Lang did it work for Pravi Sektor. He fought with Pravi Sektor in Ukraine. That is one of the fascist military formations in the Ukrainian, in Ukraine. And although he is accused by U.S. prosecutors of a double murder, the Ukraine refused to extradite him to the United States. And to read more about Craig Lang, For the Record 1097 will give you some good background. The New York Times of March 4th of 2021 had an article by Andrew E. Kramer. U.S. prosecutors call him a murderer, but to Ukraine, he is an asylum seeker. A court in Ukraine on Wednesday rejected an extradition request for an American who served in the country's right-wing paramilitary units, dealing a blow to U.S. law enforcement agencies seeking to clamp down on Americans traveling to Ukraine to get battle experience with far-right militias there. The American, Craig A. Lang, an Army veteran and North Carolina native, had been charged in connection with a double murder in Florida, but his case drew attention to the risk of Americans fighting for far-right groups in Ukraine and other global hotspots. Despite leaving the U.S. Army under a cloud, he was welcomed by a prominent military group, Reich Sector, or Pravi Sector, when he arrived in 2015, with few questions asked. And there is much, much, much more to the Nazi and fascist OUNB control of the Ukrainian military, police, and intelligence services. They also have profound influence in the educational institutions in Ukraine. I've spoken about that in many, many programs in the past. Another person with a CV that is heavily overlapped with the milieu of the OUNB, that was a Ukrainian fascist organization that collaborated with Hitler, and that is a fellow we have spoken about in the past, a fellow named Adrian, A-D-R-I-A-N, Zenz, Z-E-N-Z. Zenz is a German national. He is an end-times Christian. He also has developed political gravitas because of his participation in something called the Veterans of the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. That is a direct offshoot of the Captive Nations Committee, which in turn is an offshoot of the OUNB, as we have seen in past programs dealing with Adrian Zenz. He has been a go-to person for the American media, and he is one of the primary sources, in fact, he is the main source, for the allegation that the Chinese government is pursuing a policy of genocide against the Uyghurs in Xinjiang province. In fact, and we'll take a look at the following article. This is from the Gray Zone and was published in Consortium News on February 22nd of 2021. It's by Gareth Porter, G-A-R-E-T-H Porter, and Max Blumenthal. The U.S., quote, genocide accusation against China. Both President Joe Biden and his Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, have endorsed former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's last-minute accusation of, quote, genocide, unquote, against the Muslim Uyghur population in China's Xinjiang province. But an investigation of published work by the researcher Pompeo relied on to level his genocide allegation reveals a pattern of data abuse and fraudulent assertions that substantially undermines the incendiary charge. By the way, the New York Times has accepted all of this unquestioningly. The U.S. government's accusation of genocide against China stems from a single source, a June 2020 paper by Adrian Zenz, a right-wing German researcher affiliated with the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation and neoconservative Jamestown Foundation in Washington, D.C. Articles by the Associated Press, CNN, and BBC also relied on Zenz's article to claim that plunging Uyghur birth rates and the application of birth control measures in Uyghur counties of the Xinjiang region were proof of a policy of demographic genocide. Just days after the publication of Zenz's paper, Pompeo issued a statement denouncing China's alleged policy of, quote, forced sterilization, forced abortion, and coercive family planning, unquote, personally crediting Adrian Zenz's shocking revelations. President Biden backed the genocide charge last August when it first appeared in a flurry of media reports. His campaign spokesman told Politico, "The unspeakable oppression that Uyghurs and other ethnic minorities have suffered at the hands of China's authoritarian government is genocide, and Joe Biden stands against it in the strongest terms," unquote. Blinken, for his part, declared at his first press conference as Secretary of State that he agreed genocide had been committed against the Uyghurs. Now, by contrast, note a Naval War College analyst, Lyle Goldstein, a Chinese specialist and research professor in the Strategic and Operational Research Department of the Naval War College, told the Gray Zone that Zenz's labeling of the Chinese approach to the Uyghurs as demographic genocide, unquote, is, again quoting, "ridiculous to the point of being insulting to those who lost relatives in the Holocaust." And I would add that given Zenz's link to the Captive Nations Committee, it is more than a little ironic because the OUNB was deeply involved with the Nazi genocidal operations. One of the aspects of this, and we haven't got too much time, but one of the things that's worth noting is that the birth rates for Uyghurs in Xinjiang province have been plummeting. And that is because previously the Uyghurs were exempt from the number of limits on children per family. And again, excerpting this article, in July of 2017, Xinjiang's regional government ended the exemption on the old child limits for Uyghurs. In other words, they were allowed to have up to 10 kids. It wasn't that unusual. Continuing, Uyghur couples were thus expected to follow the same limitations recently imposed on Han Chinese couples, 2 children in urban areas, and 3 in rural regions. As the Chinese government has freely acknowledged, a 5% decrease in the birth rate in Xinjiang between 2017 and 2018 was the result of the equal enforcement of family planning policy across ethnic lines. One more time. In July of 2017, Xinjiang's regional government ended the exemption on the old child limits for Uyghurs. Uyghur couples were thus expected to follow the same limitations recently imposed on Han couples, 2 children in urban areas and 3 in rural regions. As the Chinese government has freely acknowledged, a 5% decrease in the birth rate in Xinjiang between 2017 and 2018 was the result of the equal enforcement of family planning policy across ethnic lines. Previously, the Uyghurs had been exempt. And again, note that Lyle Goldstein, a China specialist and research professor in the Strategic and Operational Research Department of the Naval War College, told the Gray Zone that Zenz's labeling of the Chinese approach to the Uyghurs as demographic genocide is, quote, "ridiculous to the point of being insulting to those who lost relatives in the Holocaust." The New York Times, by the way, has featured op-ed columns from the World Uyghur Congress. That's one of the organizations funded by the National Endowment for Democracy and other U.S. intelligence cutouts. That article, again, the U.S., quote, genocide, unquote, accusation against China by Gareth Porter and Max Blumenthal. It's originally from the Gray Zone, reprinted in the Consortium News of February 22nd of 2021. Again, more than a little ironic to see someone associated with the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, an offshoot of the Captive Nations Committee, which in turn is an offshoot of the OUNB, pointing the accusing finger of genocide at the Uyghurs. And note, more importantly than that, note that people like Joe Biden, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, current Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, the New York Times, are picking the same nonsense, and they are running with it. The genocide fabrication is already being used to put pressure on China vis-a-vis the upcoming Winter Olympics. A major event in recent weeks has been the military coup in Myanmar, formerly known as Burma. There had been a long-standing military government there. Gradually, it had been eroded, and then there was an enormous military coup there that basically removed, and I'm probably mispronouncing her name, Aung San Suu Kyi, AungSanSuuKyi. She was removed from power and some fairly asinine charges of her importing walkie-talkies were leveled at her. And there has been a lethally brutal repression of people who have protested the military coup. What remains to be seen is what effect, if any, this has on Chinese policy. I wonder if there may have been a U.S. role in that coup. Biden has been quite outspoken condemning the coup and imposing sanctions, economic sanctions on some of the people involved. Burma has a common border with China. It borders China, and previously, or I should say Myanmar has a common border with China, and Myanmar also had a very significant pattern of economic cooperation with China under Aung San Suu Kyi. An article in German Foreign Policy, which is a newsletter that can be linked on the front page of the SpitfireList.com website. Their article of February 3rd of 2021 is called Coup in Myanmar. And there is discussion in this of the links between the government of Aung San Suu Kyi and Myanmar and China. And talking about the economic ties between the countries, it has proven impossible to roll back Beijing's influence in Naypyidaw. I'm probably butchering the pronunciation of that city, capital Naypyidaw. In September of 2018, representatives from China and Myanmar signed a memorandum of understanding on the construction of the China Myanmar Economic Corridor, or CMEC, a transportation corridor connecting Mandalay, Myanmar's second largest metropolis in the center of the country, with Kunming, the metropolis in the southwest Chinese Yunnan province. The CMEC will become a link in China's new Silk Road or Belt and Road Initiative, BRI. Experts are saying that Aung San Suu Kyi is the main force behind further reinforcement of cooperation with China as a means of promoting Myanmar's quickest possible development. The generals, on the other hand, are said to worry about Beijing gaining too much influence. One more time. Experts are saying that Aung San Suu Kyi is the main force behind further reinforcement of cooperation with China as a means of promoting Myanmar's quickest possible development. The generals, on the other hand, are said to worry about Beijing gaining too much influence. So it remains to be seen just how the coup affects Chinese and Myanmar economic development. One of the reasons for that transport corridor was to bypass the Straits of Malacca that the consummately powerful U.S. Navy would be very, they could blockade that very easily. It remains to be seen again what exactly happens, how that coup affects Myanmar-Chinese relations. In our last program, we talked about a professor at Harvard Law School named J. Mark Ramsayer, who is the Mitsubishi Professor of Law at Harvard Law School, and has written an article, published an article, basically reinforcing the Japanese propaganda line on the comfort women. Those were the slave prostitutes who were basically employed by the Japanese military from 1904 to the end of World War II. There is another organization that is denying official history of Japan's involvement in World War II, including the comfort women, and that is the organization called Happy Science. Happy Science is a Japanese fascist cult that is among the organizations represented at the CPAC conference that just concluded. Vice News of February 25th of 2021 has an article by David Gilbert, G-I-L-B-E-R-T, a Japanese cult that believes its leader is an alien from Venus is speaking at CPAC. Excerpting briefly. On Friday afternoon at the Hyatt Regency Orlando, Hiroaki J. Aiba, A-E-B-A, a prominent Japanese conservative, will address CPAC about the threat China poses to the U.S., picking a prime spot in the lineup just after Donald Trump Jr. Aiba is no stranger to CPAC. In fact, 2021 marks the 10th anniversary of his first visit to the Republican Love Fest. His speaker bio on the CPAC website notes that Aiba is the chairman of the Japanese Conservative Union, or JCU, a right-wing political organization that he helped found. CPAC Japan, which has been running for the last four, one more time, a right-wing political organization and that he helped found CPAC Japan, which has been running for the last 4 years in Tokyo. What isn't mentioned is the central role Aiba plays in a Japanese cult called Happy Science, whose leader believes he is the Messiah and sells miracle cures for COVID-19. Happy Science was founded in October of 1986 by Ryuho Okawa, a former Wall Street trader who claims to be the reincarnated form of Buddha, who himself was the reincarnated form of El Cantare, C-A-N-T-A-R-E, a god from Venus who created life on Earth millions of years ago. And from the Wikipedia entry on Happy Science, at the same time, the organization's political wing, the Happiness Realization Party, promotes political views that include support for Japanese military expansion, support for the use of nuclear deterrence, and denial of historic events such as the Nanking Massacre in China and the comfort women issue in South Korea, the latter obviously putting him in company with J. Mark Ramsayer. One of the more nauseating offerings by Ryu Okawa, and there is a link in the description that will be published for the record 1176, he claims to be able to channel spirits, and he claimed to channel the spirit of the late Iris Chang, the author of a book on the Rape of Nanking, who also had a cover endorsement for the book Gold Warriors. And in this channeling, unquote, he claims that Iris Chang fabricated her book and wishes that it was withdrawn. It is an original way of manifesting historical revisionism. We've spoken about Iris Chang and her heroic work and her very, very suspicious death. And for the record shows 1107 and 1108, Deep Politics and the Death of Iris Chang. So, it's downward and down for CPAC and Happy Science, joining Falun Gong as one of the fascist cults in the right-wing Republican pantheon. This concludes For the Record program number 1176, miscellaneous articles and updates being recorded on March 17th of 2021. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.